Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Dealing with floods today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining me and my co-host, Garrett, in the studio today for a discussion on the third of this month's newsworthy clips. We're going to be talking about flooding the court. That's the name of the lesson. Oh, my goodness, Garrett. It's a newsworthy clip, and it's about flooding.
Yep.
The court. The poor judge. What are all the lawyers going to do, Garrett?
Not the kind of court we're talking about. That word has a few different meanings. Here, we're actually talking about a basketball court.
Wait a minute. Are we talking about when all the teams and all the players and all the fans run out onto the court?
That could be a meaning.
That's flooding the court.
Yeah, if you flood a place, that could mean just full of people. Here, we're actually talking about that kind of natural disaster, or maybe not necessarily a disaster, but the accumulation of a lot of water.
Aren't basketball courts built of wood?
Not outdoor ones.
Wouldn't it be terrible to get them wet?
Not ones that are outdoors.
Yeah. What we're really talking about here is one narrow innovation or approach to dealing with flooding. Because flooding is a problem basically everywhere there's water.
Yeah, in yesterday's article, we talked a bit about urban planning, how different spaces around a city are used. And we're kind of continuing that in a slightly different way today.
Have you ever been in a flooded area? Or in a flood?
I would say not fully. I mean, sometimes even around where we live, it rains pretty hard. And there's a decent amount of depth in some streets or on some sidewalks. And so, you know, my shoes get pretty wet. But I don't know that I've ever been in an actual flood.
One of those things about living in sort of modern cities is that we really aren't exposed to that sort of stuff very much. I mean, they do occasionally happen, but when they happen, they're like really big news because there's been a huge systematic failure.
Well, it depends on the city. Some cities don't have that kind of infrastructure.
Well, that's right. So, I'm from a more rural area, but, you know, when I was growing up, sort of, I think this is true for everybody, but basically you have localized knowledge that you gain from the area you're in. Like it might be how to deal with the weather. It might be how to deal with wild animals in your backyard, whatever it is. You're going to have localized knowledge. And one of those areas of knowledge that I was sort of taught was how to avoid flooding in your house.
Okay.
Like I was always taught, my mother and my father would, you know, if we were driving down a street, they would say, which side of the street should you avoid buying on? And we knew because that was the side where the water would flood to. Right. And so there was sort of this awareness because we weren't in a big city with extensive infrastructure around flood defenses.
Yeah, that's a newer thing. I remember growing up in school, we would talk often about the problems with big cities where everything is paved over with streets and sidewalks and the water doesn't have a chance to go down into the earth. Thankfully, with a lot more modern developments, there are a lot of ways for that water to kind of flow out.
I think the big issue here is that historically, concentrations of people in cities tended to be smaller. And so we had the luxury of being able to build in areas that didn't really flood, at least not with any frequency, right? But as those cities grow, people are pushed into less and less favorable areas.
New Orleans is the perfect example.
Classic example. And then the result of that is that to protect those houses and areas, you need to spend more and more on infrastructure to protect them. But if you drop the ball on that, you neglect it, you don't put the money in you should, you don't maintain it the way you should, you end up with disasters like the New Orleans situation, right, when it flooded. And so one of the things I think urban planners are always looking to do is find ways to deal with excess water. You were mentioning things that were paved over. there's nowhere for the water to go.
Right.
And so we need to find a way to catch, divert, and dispose of all of that water mm-hmm. when you have a flash flood situation. Flash flood is one of the terms we're going to hear here in a few minutes. I think before we discuss it, though, we should jump into our reading. So listeners, if you have your July magazine, I would encourage you to open it up. We're going to do two readings today. If you don't have your magazine, I would encourage you to pause our program and get the magazine because it's the easiest way to support us here at Advanced Radio. And it will enrich your learning experience. All right, let's do our first reading together now.
Flooding the court. They look like ordinary basketball courts, but two new courts built next to public housing in New York City double as flood prevention. In a sudden flash flood, when the city's aging sewer system can easily become overwhelmed and streets can fill with water, the sunken basketball courts act like retention basins. The design can hold as much as 330,000 gallons, with the court's lowest areas filling like a pool, and additional water stored in bioretention cells beneath the surface. The project becomes like a sponge, which basically holds the water as much as it can, said Runit Chaya, principal at Green Collective, a landscape architecture firm that worked on the design with city agencies, local residents, engineers from Hazen and Sawyer, and the urban planning firm Mark Wouters Studios.
Okay, so Garrett, we're introduced here to things that look like ordinary basketball courts. Outdoor courts, not made of wood.
Right. You can play basketball indoors or outdoors.
They are built next to public housing in New York City, and they double as flood prevention. So very quickly, public housing. There is some public housing in major Asian cities, but
yeah.
not anywhere near of the type and volume that we have in the West.
Yeah.
So what is public housing?
Well, I don't have a lot of experience with it, but essentially I believe it is housing that is owned by the government and usually offered to people from lower income backgrounds.
Generally at low cost or subsidized cost. So unfortunately, frequently with that model, public housing often has a reputation of being
dangerous.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say below standard, you know.
Yeah, I think those go hand in hand.
Not desirable. You're not eager to get into public housing. In other parts of the world, though, they have programs where it's like the government builds it and then sells it to you.
Okay.
Like you're kind of renting it and then eventually you own it. Hmm. The idea being that when you own your house, you take much better care of it than when you're just sort of being given it to stay in or things like that. Nonetheless, this is the sort of area that would attract public programs for attention because it probably suffers a wide range of problems.
Yeah, and the government is able to do more with it because the government owns the land.
Yeah, and probably, this is like we've been talking about, is probably this land is not the most favorable of building sites. If it was, it would have been sold off and developed long ago by various business interests, right? So flooding might be a real problem there. They go on to mention flash floods. Now, flash floods are, you know, I will be honest, I only have experience with these here in Asia. We did have flooding in rural areas where I grew up, but it was sort of predictable flooding. Like, you know, people had been living in the area for a couple hundred years. They knew where the river spilled over. Nobody built anything there, right? So there were, you know, we had some experience with flooding, but not flash flooding. What's the difference between a flood and a flash flood?
Well, I think of a normal flood as something that kind of you see coming. Maybe a typhoon is coming. It's been raining for days without ending, and the water just kind of slowly increases over time.
I just think of it as things being underwater.
Yeah.
Like the water being in places it isn't normally in.
Absolutely. On the other hand, a flash flood is something that is very sudden. All of a sudden, it rains a lot, and whatever infrastructure is there to divert that water isn't able to do so at the rate that the rain is kind of pouring down, and so it can be quite dangerous.
You actually notice on the island, I don't know if you have ever noticed this, but when you're driving across a bridge in rural areas of the island, often the river area itself is absolutely massive.
Oh,
but there's
yeah.
only a trickle of water
yes.
going through it.
Definitely.
You know, it's because we're basically on mountains, right? And so when it rains hard, the river is suddenly not a trickle. It's like this massive surging torrent.
Almost like this big, what would you call it, an alluvial plain?
Yeah. I suppose you could argue that that is like a flash flood, but really that is just a river.
Hmm.
So the flash flood would be like if that water has spilled out of the river and is very quickly submerging your homes and your buildings and everything
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, in a home, or I know this can happen in like the American Southwest if you're out hiking
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of in some narrow canyons where suddenly that water rushes through.
So you mentioned that there was this problem with basically paving over everything because that basically catches the water and then it directs it ideally into sewers that take it away. But if you're building, paving, and not updating the sewer system, then you get what is mentioned here. When the city's aging sewer system can easily become overwhelmed and streets can fill with water. So the idea being that you've built more than the sewer can handle. So when you get a large rain, there's, you know, no way for it all to be taken away in the sewer quickly. Or by the sewer quickly. And so the result is streets can fill with water. And so these basketball courts, they've given them kind of a unique feature. They are sunken.
Hmm.
Meaning they're sunk in the water, underwater?
They're sunken down into the ground, or basically they're just lower than the ground around them.
Okay. So you sort of dig a hole and put them at the bottom.
Yep.
Right? And then this lets them act as a retention basin. A basin is like a big bowl that holds mm-hmm. water. Retention means to hold, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea being these holes, they are a basketball court during dry times, and they are a giant tank to hold water during wet times. I guess that's the idea. The design can hold as much as 330,000 gallons. Maybe this is the wrong question for you, but how many liters are in a gallon?
I don't actually know the answer to that. I just remember buying a gallon of milk growing
up. Yeah.
It's a standard amount.
I think it's 3.86 something, but it's basically 4 liters per gallon.
Somewhere around there.
We're talking about well over 1 million liters of water here, with the court's lowest areas filling like a pool and additional water stored, now this was interesting, in bioretention cells beneath the surface. So the basketball court isn't just pavement slapped on the ground. There's something going on beneath it.
Yeah, there's also space to hold some of that water underneath the ground, and we see bio there. It's not just concrete areas, but they've thought about the different kinds of natural materials that can hold that water.
Normally it means life, right? So you'd think grass or something. I don't know exactly what the nature of these bioretention cells is, though.
Yeah,
it's not really described.
Grass is growing underground here.
I can't imagine that, yeah. Anyway, the project becomes like a sponge, which basically holds the water as much as it can. Okay, now this comes from the principal at Grain Collective, a landscape architecture firm that worked on the design with city agencies. So, who else worked on this?
You have local residents and engineers from Hazen and Sawyer and the urban planning firm, I would say Mark Wouters Studios. It sounds kind of like a Dutch name to me.
Mm-hmm. So, we have landscape architects. You know what they do?
They design the land.
Yeah, gardens and how we're going to put things in, right?
Parks.
They have engineers. Presumably these are civil engineers who are concerned with the sewers and the removal of water. And then we have urban planners who come up with, they kind of play a project manager role in this sort of thing between the residents and stuff, I assume, and come up with the big plan. All of these different groups working together to come up with this idea and bring it to reality. That brings us to our second reading. Let's have a look at it now.
Climate change is making heavy storms more likely because warmer air holds more moisture, loading clouds with extra water. It's an even bigger challenge in cities like New York that are covered in pavement and that have combined sewer systems, meaning a single system handles both household sewage and stormwater. As the city looked for ways to capture stormwater, public housing sites presented an opportunity. NYCHA, the New York City Housing Authority, is unique in having large pieces of property within very dense neighborhoods that provide the opportunity to mitigate stormwater overflows in a way that most properties do not, said Siobhan Watson, Vice President of Sustainability at NYCHA. There was also an opportunity to improve public space. The design team worked closely with NYCHA residents, emphasizing that the project wasn't just about climate change. It's very hard to go to these communities and just start talking about climate change and flood protection because they are thinking about basic needs. And we're talking about infrastructure they didn't even ask for, says Chaya. So you kind of change the story. And it's an honest story that, hey, it's actually a win-win situation. You're going to get an upgraded amenity.
Okay, so we've been talking about all these different groups who are involved in making this decision. I don't know if you've ever worked with a lot of groups, Garrett. It's not always an easy process.
Yeah, nothing quite to this scale.
That's right. And, of course, when groups are, they have different priorities. Let's put it that way. They all want different things. Mm-hmm. And you are under pressure. Oh, it can be even more difficult. So in our story here, one of the things that is putting this situation under pressure is climate change. Now, why is climate change, forcing basketball courts to be placed underground level?
Well, we see here
dips.
Climate change is making heavy storms more likely. It does bring my mind to some of the storms they have had in New York City in recent years, like a major hurricane that really you didn't hear much about growing up. They do seem to be a bit more common.
Okay, so I guess A, it makes the weather more extreme and less predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on here to talk about how it's an even bigger challenge in cities like New York that are covered in pavement, which is one of the things you have mentioned, and that have combined sewer systems, meaning a single system handles both household sewage and stormwater. Okay, so the design of the city is not really suitable for the new extreme weather that it is facing.
Yeah, I wonder how often they have redesigned those sewer systems. Of course, New York City is not a new city. Some of that infrastructure might be quite old.
Well, that's okay, if you just have a rain, because the rain will wash some of the yucky out of the sewer.
You
right?
hope so, yeah.
Yeah, the problem here being when there's too much water going into the sewer, so the sewer explodes water out of the sewer.
And other things.
And yucky is coming out too, and then it's, on your car or whatever. So the idea being, very generally, the cities are not designed to accommodate the new weather and climate situation. So the city then is looking for ways to do this. Now, I assume, ideally, without redoing the entire sewer system.
Sure.
Which would be prohibitively excessive. Too expensive. So as the city looked for ways to capture stormwater, public housing sites presented an opportunity. Makes you wonder if that's because the government already owned those public housing
sites.
That
is my thinking.
They're like, we can make them do it. They haven't met the residents yet. Now, how did you say this? NYCHA?
Probably.
NYCHA?
Let's just say NYCHA.
Yeah. The Housing Authority. Let's call it the Housing Authority. It's the New York City Housing Authority. Basically, that's going to be the branch of government that oversees, for example, this public housing. They're kind of in charge of this. It is unique in having large pieces of property within very dense neighborhoods that provide the opportunity to mitigate stormwater overflows in a way that most properties do not. Okay, so the way I'm reading this, Garrett, you tell me if you're understanding this differently. They own these public housing blocks, big buildings. But they're not just all jammed together along a street. It's like there's going to be an area of grass, park, playground, something like that around it. So they don't occupy the entire area of the land they own, the city owns, mm-hmm. with the public housing. They put public housing in this area.
On what we might call plots of land.
The result then being that unlike a lot of the private housing, the city has grass.
Yeah.
That's how I'm
understanding. And the authority to build things like this.
And the authority.
They're not just going to move onto someone's property, take over their basketball court, and dig a hole.
Well, but, I haven't spent a lot of time in New York, but like everyone else, I've seen a lot of New York in media. And what I picture is those brownstone houses, you know, where it's like one against the next. Like they're all built together.
Yeah, I think it depends on the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think so. But I think what they're pointing out here is that the housing authority properties have a lot more concentration in the building, but a lot of space in land around it. So they're able to build basketball courts, for example.
Yeah, there's the opportunity to mitigate stormwater overflows. Of course, mitigate here means to lessen, essentially, right?
Yeah. And this is according to the person who is in charge of sustainability at the, I'm going to call it NYCHA again. I kind of like it, the housing authority. If you're in charge of sustainability, the idea is basically here they're referring to like environmental sustainability, but they'll also be referring to other kinds of sustainability, like social sustainability and, you know, those kinds of things. Okay, so this was the primary goal, right? They were looking for ways to deal with flood water. But there were also other opportunities. So they've got this big public housing building. It's built on this area of land. And they have this chance to improve public space because, of course, it's all owned by the government. The design team worked closely with the housing authority residents. That's the people who live in the public housing. Emphasizing that the project wasn't just about climate change. Okay. Presumably, the people living in the public housing didn't care too much about climate change.
No, they've got other things to worry about. And but that's what we see in that next quote there.
They did want to play basketball.
Of course.
Yeah. So you mentioned the quote. What's the quote say?
It's very hard to go to these communities and just start talking about climate change and flood protection because they are thinking about basic needs. And we are talking about infrastructure they didn't even ask for.
Yeah. So they have different priorities. We mentioned that often public housing has low-income people, so they're going to be worried about work and food and bills and all kinds of things, less concerned about what's going to happen with global climate change in the next 50 years.
Yeah, and that flooding might not affect them so much if they live on the 14th floor of a high-rise apartment building.
That's a good point. That's a good point. The quote continues, so you kind of change the story. What do they mean here? You're lying to people?
Well, you change how you present it.
So you say, we're going to build you a basketball court.
Yeah.
It might flood after heavy rains, but most of the time it'll be okay.
Basically.
That's what you say.
Yeah.
So you focus on saying we're going to build a basketball court. You don't focus on saying there is a desperate need for us to future-proof this city against climate change.
Exactly.
Nice. Sounds like a good idea. You change the story, and it's an honest story. So they're not lying.
Not really.
It's, hey, it's actually a win-win situation. You're going to get an upgraded amenity. Just briefly, let's talk about amenities. That is a term that gets thrown around a lot in the hotel business.
That's what I was thinking of.
Not so much thrown around when we're talking about our houses.
Yeah, but I suppose you might hear it if you were buying a new home, right? Especially if it were in like some planned community.
This is why I think we should talk about it. I tend to think of amenities as services that are provided by others.
Mm.
Like you aren't putting it in yourself.
All right.
So, for example, if you're in a hotel, you know, they're always going to say they have free Wi-Fi. Now, why on earth would they not have free Wi-Fi in this day and age? That's barely, that's not a bonus or an extra at this point. It's required. But they're going to say they have free Wi-Fi. You don't have to bring a Wi-Fi router with you and put the Wi-Fi in.
That would be a pain.
It is provided for free. So Wi-Fi is an example of amenity, but it ranges in other things too, right?
Swimming pools, maybe a recreation room.
The gym.
Yeah.
Yeah. The spa, free shampoo in the bathroom.
But it feels like there are very specific contexts when we use this term. If I were getting on a flight on an airplane and they provided a meal.
Free slippers.
I don't know that I would call that an amenity.
I don't think I would either.
Yeah.
Interesting. Nonetheless, I would not typically associate amenities with my home.
Hmm.
But clearly, if you're living in a housing authority public housing block, there are things being provided by the housing authority. And so I guess amenity is the correct word here.
Yeah, it's not something that the residents planned.
So what kinds of amenities would you see in public housing? basketball court, maybe playground. What other kinds of things? Maybe maintenance?
Maybe a community center for
community
activities.
Center. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Good stuff. I wish I had some of those amenities.
Yeah.
And flood prevention at that. Sounds like a good idea. Sounds like it gives people something to do, this free amenity, and it takes care of a potential long-term problem.
Yeah, I looked up this project online, and some of these similar groups are working on other things in other parts of the city. Some of them are sunken, like this basketball court. Some of them are level with the ground, but just have other storage solutions underground.
Well, listeners, that brings us to the end of our time for Newsworthy Clips this month, but we hope you'll join us again soon for another Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Garrett.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.